This will be on you to chafe under his leadership. Frank looked incredulous. You want me to fight him? Not fight him, said Reed. Just be disgruntled. This isn't what I signed up for. Why am I working for a Nazi? That kind of thing. Because I'm Jewish, said Frank. And we're known for our hot-headed insubordination. That's not what we're saying, said Davis. But it is essentially the illusion we want to create. We think the Stasi will target you for precisely that reason. Not because you're disconnected enough to betray your country, but because they will see an opportunity to stoke whatever level of discontent you already have, enough to get you to drop a secret here or there, maybe even without realizing it. I would never, said Frank. We need you to, said Reed. Beginning on Sunday, said Davis, Wohlreich is going to be your boss. He's already overbearing, so once he has the authority to back that up, you should have ample opportunity to complain about his leadership, not necessarily here, but out there in your life. When that handler eventually contacts you, you'll have something real to complain about, which means they'll believe it, and if we're lucky, they'll pull you deeper into their trust than they otherwise would. It may be that all they ever do is ply you with booze and try to get you talking, and if that's the case, then we can feed you information, as I said. But if you can convince them that you hate working with Nazis to the point that you hate the entire BND, they might bring you into active service. You might have a chance to meet people higher up in the organization, or they might directly ask you for sensitive information, which not only gives us a chance to fill that information with damaging half-truths, but also gives us a clearer sense of what they're trying to learn. The opportunities for intelligence here are amazing. And if they realize that I'm playing them, don't let them, said Davis. Frank laughed again, harder this time, as if the situation was simply so impossible to believe that he had no other reaction to it.
Well, I suppose it shouldn't be that hard, because I do hate working with Nazis, and I'm genuinely angry that you, of all people, are promoting one, no matter what the reason is.
I had relatives who died in the camps. I think the BND is corrupt, from Wohlreich and Wagner all the way up to the top, and every jackbooted thug in between. You're not asking me to play a role, Chief. You're asking me to be myself.
That's where you're wrong, said Davis. That's where this becomes not the easiest but the most difficult mission you will ever be assigned. You will be playing a role, and that role is almost exactly Franklin Schwartz, but it's not. 90% of it, maybe 95%, will be you, and that is why it will work. It will have your truth at its core, your passions and your emotions, and yes, your anger at a bad situation. But that last 5% is not and cannot ever be you. The real Frank Schwartz would never go as far as the one you'll be pretending to be. He would never hurt his co-workers or endanger his country's plans or actions or intelligence. You need to keep that 5% fixed in the center of your mind, buried deep so they can't see it, but touching and influencing every decision you make. You need to believe with all your soul that the things you are doing are correct, that they are right and moral, but you also need to know simultaneously that they aren't. That you are only doing them to hurt the enemy. That the real Frank Schwartz is always and endlessly loyal to this office, to his co-workers, and to the country that he works for.
You're asking me to tear myself in half, said Frank.
I am, said Davis. I'd offer my condolences, but nothing I say will make it easier. Live the lie without giving into it, and talk to us if you need to talk.
Mo, said Frank.
I'm fine. I can do it.
Good, said Davis. Don't do anything yet, though. Just wait for Sunday.
2:42 p.m., West Berlin. Keeping secrets in an intelligence office proved every bit as complicated as Reed had expected, even more so if that was possible. Frank knew that the Stasi were trying to recruit a new double agent, but he knew none of the details, not even the code names Talon and Baker. The analysts, Chuck and Lisa, knew about Talon and Baker, but had no idea what they referred to or what such an operation might be about. And Reed and Davis's shared suspicion that there might already be a double agent among them had been revealed to no one. They each had pieces of the puzzle, but nobody had them all. And that was the problem. The Stasi were working with a man named Tsiganov, and that was concerning because Tsiganov was so clearly a Russian name. East Germany claimed to be a sovereign state, aided but not governed by the Soviet Union. Evidence that a KGB officer was overseeing a Stasi operation could be a vital piece of proof that the Soviets were far more involved than they claimed. Davis needed to know who Tsiganov was, and he eventually decided that the name itself was safe to share with the office as a whole. This was the cabin's purpose, after all, not just to gather information, but to interpret it, increase it, and pass it along to those in a position to act on it. Figuring out who Tsiganov was could be a major coup for Western intelligence, so he put the team to work on it. The Stasi have recently met with a man named Tsiganov, Davis told them, leaving out all other details and suspicions. Even the racing stable was a secret. I want to know everything you can possibly learn about him as soon as you can possibly learn it. That afternoon, Gisela Breuer filled them in on the first sparse fruits of her research. I have found four men named Tsiganov, she said, handing out mimeographed sheets to each officer in the cabin. There are presumably more, but these are the ones most likely to have been involved in a meeting with the Stasi. Reed picked up his copy of the freshly inked paper, wrinkling his nose at the smell.
None of them lives in Berlin, said Wagner, looking at the list.
That's right, said Gisela. Whoever was at this meeting came in from out of town. Out of the country, in fact, they all live in Russia.
That's pretty damning right there, said Chuck.
Nothing is damning unless we can prove it, said Volrai, taking control of the impromptu meeting as he always seemed to do. Tell us about the first one.
Reed wanted to say something, but worried he might reveal too much.
Vasily Tsiganov, said Gisela, a miner from Monchergorsk. I do not know what business a miner would have in Berlin, but Monchergorsk has a Soviet airbase, said Lisa. So his registration as a mine worker might only be a cover.
Correct, said Gisela. It is not a big town, and the mines on the airbase are the two main employers. It wouldn't be the first time that a Soviet military officer is registered as menial labor with a nearby factory or mine, trying to throw us off.
Married, said Ostertag. 5-year-old son.
There's certainly a possibility, said Volreich, but nothing jumps out as immediately suspicious. We'll look into him. And the second one?
Josef Tsiganov from the city of Kubishev, said Gisela. One of the key sites in the Soviet space program. Josef works in the Progress plant, where they built the Vostok.
Reed thought that was a tenuous connection at best. There was no way the man they were looking for was an engineer in the space program, but he didn't want to say that, once again, out of fear that he would give away something he shouldn't. Keeping secrets from professional secret finders was a nightmare. How was he ever going to pull this off?
Chuck jumped in and solved the immediate problem, arriving through deduction at the same conclusion Reed had reached through knowledge.
I can't imagine we're looking for someone in the space program.
A local meeting would be for a local op, right? If Berlin were suddenly part of the space program, we probably would have heard about it elsewhere.
Probably, said Wagner. That doesn't make it impossible.
But why would the space program send someone here? Asked Frank. He had an old baseball on his desk that he played with when he was nervous. He was playing with it now. Why would they have a space op in Berlin, of all places? We don't have any launch sites or landing sites or the political stability to risk building one.
Haven't you heard the propaganda?
Asked Ostertag with a grin.
The GDR is the strongest nation in the world. It could be a social op, said Wolreich, ignoring the joke. Yuri Gagarin is the biggest hero they have right now. And he stayed in Kubyshev, by the way, after they recovered his landing capsule. If the Soviet government is taking him on another victory tour, they will absolutely stop in Berlin to win a few more hearts and minds.
Gagarin already had his victory tour, said Lisa. Plus, he was injured last month. His wife caught him with a nurse and he jumped off a second-story balcony to get away. Read the reports. He landed on his face and he has a big scar.
She drew a long line above her left eyebrow.
They won't be touring him for a long while.
Chicks dig scars, said Frank.
But not infidelity, said Lisa.
Reed made sure not to look at her.
Fine, said Wolreich, frowning at the paper in his hands. Number three?
3 and 4 are both from Moscow, said Gisela. Alexei Siganov is a known military officer, a lieutenant colonel in the Soviet army. You should have led with him then, said Ostertag.
A known officer is far less likely to be involved in a covert operation, said Wagner. He would be too recognizable.
By who? Asked Chuck. You're in surveillance, but most of the people who'd see him on this trip are untrained civilians. As long as he's smart enough not to come in uniform, he could walk from one end of the GDR to the other and nobody would know him from Adam.
They would hear him speaking Russian, said Wagner, or German with a Russian accent.
But that's true of all of these guys, said Frank. He tossed his baseball in the air and caught it again deftly. Lieutenant Colonel Siganov wouldn't be any more noticeable here than the others, if he was trying to stay unnoticed.
We have contacts in Moscow, said Wolreich. With access to army base records, I'll ask them if Alexei Siganov is out of the country right now. That could answer this fairly decisively.
If Alexei's still there, then sure, said Chuck. We'd have our answer. If he's gone, though, that could still mean anything. He looked up. Unless your contacts can get us his travel itinerary to prove that he's come here.
That's unlikely, said Wolreich.
Let's move on, said Frank. I want to hear about this fourth Siganov.
I'm not done talking about Alexei, said Wolreich,
shutting him down without so much as a look. He was definitely, Reed thought, an overbearing man. He always had to be in control of any conversation. Reed watched Frank to see what he'd do, but Frank merely caught his baseball again and held it, staring at Wolreich without speaking. Was he planning to say something? Trying to decide if he should? He wasn't supposed to start complaining about Wolreich until Sunday, but would his anger at the situation cause him to jump the gun? But Frank said nothing and Wolreich continued.
What does he do in the army?
He's lieutenant colonel, said Chuck. He commands a battalion. What else? He's got a few hundred soldiers and all the bureaucracy that goes with them. He probably spends most of his time doing paperwork.
If a whole battalion is coming to Berlin, said Lisa, that's not good.
We would have heard of it, said Wagner.
Because they're speaking Russian, said Frank.
Because we are a surveillance office, Wagner growled.
Hearing about things is our job.
Maybe this is us hearing about it, said Lisa. She turned to Reed. We still don't know what Operation Siganov is running. A massive troop movement, an occupation force.
An invasion? Asked Reed. Or reinforcements for the GDR's police, said Chuck.
to stop their citizens from tearing down the wall. But the wall is there because the people want it there, said Ostertag, shaking his head in mock solemnity. It's not there to keep them in, it's to keep us out. It's an anti-fascist protection rampart. Doesn't anybody read the propaganda? Mein Gott! Said Wolreich loudly. Try to take at least one conversation seriously, Johannes. This is important.
Ostertag only chuckled. What I'm saying is this. Can you imagine the propaganda nightmare if the GDR has to defend their own wall from their own citizens, with Soviet troops, no less? It would expose the lie at the heart of their actions. They'll wait as long as they possibly can before moving in an entire battalion of Soviet soldiers.
He smiled at Wolrach.
The situation is bad, but it's not that bad. They must maintain the fiction behind the wall, even more so than the wall itself, if they want to retain their power.
What? Said Wolrach testily. Is the first helpful thing you've said all day. Maybe start with that next time instead of telling jokes.
Du warst so amerikanisch, muttered Wagner.
Oh, crap, said Frank in mock terror. And none of us speaks German. How will we ever know what he just said?
Chuck shook his head. Everybody just calmed down.
I assume it was nice, said Frank. Something really loving and supportive.
Enough, said Wolrach. We are moving on.
Very well, said Gisela. Sergei Sigonov is a mid-level financial officer in Korporatsiya Volskaya. They make drivetrains for industrial vehicles. That gives him the weakest connection to the Soviet government, but the strongest justification for traveling to Berlin.
Which makes him the most likely one to be a spy, said Ostertag.
Lack of suspicion and freedom of movement are the best two qualities he could have.
So the Soviets hired him to pass along a message? Asked Frank.
Or the corporate job is a cover, said Chuck. Just like that first guy's factory job.
What was the exact wording of the message? Asked Wagner.
Reed shifted uncomfortably in his seat.
That's on a need-to-know basis.
And we don't need to know? Asked Wagner.
Wolrach shook his head. According to Chief Davis, no, we don't. If we knew more about who this man is and why we're looking for him, then yes, maybe that would make this Sigonov easier to identify. But our leader has determined that we don't need to know, so we will make do with what we have.
Always obey the leader,
Frank muttered, but if Wolrach heard him, he didn't react.
So what do we know then?
Asked Wagner.
Nothing.
We know that whatever Sigonov is up to, some kind of local operation or reconnaissance, is small, said Lisa, or it's still in the early stages. If it were bigger or further along, we would have heard about it before.
Frank frowned. So it's a small local op. Then why would Sigonov, whichever one of these guys he turns out to be, come here from out of town to tell the local Stasi officers about their own op?
Well,
said Chuck, and then stopped. He looked at Lisa. She looked back, but Reed couldn't read her expression.
Well, he started again.
The obvious answer is that Sigonov is running the op. That makes him almost certainly KGB, no matter what other cover story he ends up having. And the most likely operation for a KGB officer to come in and manage is counterintelligence.
Reed grew nervous. They were so close to intuiting a truth Davis had tried to keep hidden.
So he is hunting for a mole, said Wolrach. Perhaps even Longshore.
That or he is trying to create a mole, said Lisa. Maybe in the U.S. State Department, maybe in the West German government or police. Maybe even in the BND or the CIA.
Maybe even here, said Wagner.
Frank looked shocked. Gisela looked sick. Ostertag smiled, but glanced at Wolrach and bit down on whatever joke he was going to make.
Reed scanned the other faces in the cabin and saw them all looking back, all studying each other, all gauging the potential innocence or guilt of their co-workers' reactions. They have one single name, thought Reed, and they still managed to pull the truth out of it, like a rabbit from a hat. Professional secret finders indeed.
Saturday, October 21st, 1961, 9:24 a.m., West Berlin. Reed slept in on Saturday morning, though it was a fitful rest, and he spent most of it with his eyes pressed into the pillow, telling himself that it was still dark outside long after it was light. He expected the phone to ring at any moment for Bettina to call him in for another message from Longshore, and he couldn't decide if he dreaded that possibility or craved it. He didn't get very many days off. The Cold War never rested, so neither did the cabin. And while he didn't want to go into work, he didn't really want to stay home either. They had two little fragments that might be clues, Ziegel and a meeting in a stable. But they still had no idea how those fragments fit together into anything substantial. He wanted more. It was like he was riding a train racing through the stations and each one brought a new piece of intel. He wanted it to stop or at least slow down so he could think about each new clue as it arrived, but he also wanted it to speed up and bring him each new clue as quickly as it could. Instead, he simply held on to the railing and hoped it didn't crash. At 9:30, he got out of bed, filled his kettle with water, and set it on the electric stove to warm. He had spent much of the night outside of Lise's apartment building, watching it nervously, hoping that she didn't try to leave. He didn't want her to be guilty. He didn't want her to be anything but the trustworthy friend, lover, and co-worker she had always been. It made him sick to spy on her, even in this distant, unobtrusive way, but an order was an order. She could be doing all manner of traitorous activities inside her apartment, and he knew he should be trying to get a closer look. But he told himself that he would look more closely when he could, all the while praying that such an act would never be required. The kettle whistled and he poured a cup of tea. While it steeped, he wandered through the tiny apartment in a robe and two pairs of socks, curling his toes against the cold. He looked outside. The sun was shining. It would be warmer out there. He should go for a walk. He drank his tea and dressed, being sure to carry his identification and his service pistol, hidden under his coat. He stared at his books on encryption, wondering what kind of code Longshore might be using to send his hidden message in a message. He wondered who he might be sending that message to and why it was secret. He left his apartment and walked down the stairs, only to find Lisa coming in from the street.
Miss Kohler, I thought you were at work today.
I should be. I told the chief I was sick.
Reed looked around him nervously, though the building's foyer was empty.
Why?
We need to talk. Can we go up to your room?
Had she seen him outside her apartment? She was a trained field agent. She knew how to spot a tail. He'd tried to be so careful, staying so far away he'd been practically useless, but maybe she'd seen him anyway. He shook his head and tried to convince himself it was fine. If she was mad at him, he'd be able to see it in her face. She must be here for something else. He hoped.
People saw you come in, he said. We're not supposed to be together.
More people will see us if we stay outside.
She started walking toward the stairs.
Come with me, this is important.
Reed followed her back up to his apartment, staying silent while he pulled out his key and let her in. She walked to the center of the sitting room and stood there, not even turning, while he locked the door behind them. He looked at her, still unmoving, and shivered. He turned on the radiator, but didn't take off his jacket. It would take a while to warm up.
Lisa,
he said at last.
I do not know how to ask this, she said.
Ask? I thought you had something to tell me.
Both.
Her face was solemn, but also jittery and nervous. She licked her lips and wrinkled her nose. She was working up her courage.
"Just say it,"
Reed said, but inside he was racked with worry. She nodded, licking her lips again, and then spoke.
"I think I know who it is."
That wasn't what Reed had expected at all, and it took him a moment to process.
"You think you know who is? Siganov?" "Longshore," Lisa said. "I think I've figured out who Longshore is."
Reed's eyes widened and he walked to the bookshelf. Not because he needed something from it, but because he wanted time to think. He was pacing. He stopped.
"Who is it?"
"It's the clues Longshore gave us,"
she said, deflecting his question.
"Siegel and Rennstahl. I think they're references to signal phrases I used to use before I moved behind a desk. I think..."
She paused and looked Reed right in the eyes.
"I think Longshore is a man I used to work with in the field. And if I am right, I think he's not just sending mysterious messages. He is sending them to me. Personally."
Reed nodded, looking at her face, wondering what to do next. The idea that Longshore was sending hidden messages had been his theory. He proposed it and argued for it, but he'd never considered that the messages might be intended for Lisa. Should they call Davis? Should they go to the cabin and sort it all out? Whatever they did, they couldn't do it together.
"Who is it?"
he asked again.
"I don't want to say. I might be wrong. And if I am, I don't want to reveal someone who might still be an active agent in a different operation."
"You don't trust me?"
asked Reed, though he felt guilty as soon as he had said it. He wasn't telling her everything either.
"Chief Davis hasn't told any of us who Longshore is," said Lisa. "If he's keeping it secret, then so am I."
"That's fair enough."
Reed paced again, no longer caring if he looked nervous.
"So what do the clues mean?"
"I didn't put it together until after the second message. I thought Siegel was just a brick, but it was also an old warning phrase I used to use with the agent. I can't just keep calling him the agent. We need a name we can use for him."
She looked around the room, reaching for a code name, and pointed at the thermometer on the wall.
"We will call him Mercury. So, when I worked with Mercury in East Berlin, Siegel was our word for pay attention, this is important. We would say it in written messages or even in person. But that was 4 years ago, and I didn't even think about it in the first message. But then the second message had the word Rennstahl."
"A racing stable," said Reed.
"Yes," she said. "But not just any racing stable. Mercury and I used a restaurant called Rennstahl as one of our meeting places. We had 3 restaurants all over the Soviet sector of the city, but Rennstahl was the safest. It was the farthest from the border and the least likely to have Stasi employees or politicians of any kind. The owners were sympathetic to our work. We met there when we needed to talk about something in private."
"You think he wants to meet with you in person?"
"I don't know what I think.
It might be a coincidence."
"It might," said Lisa. "I know. But we know those words mean something because they're the part of each message that doesn't make sense. And each word, Siegel and Rennstahl, is the 6th word of its message and the only words in German."
She paused as if speaking the next bit aloud was painful. But then she said it anyway.
"Unless I'm wrong and the rest of that message has more German or more words in the beginning?"
Reed grimaced and stopped pacing.
"I can't tell you any parts of the message that Davis hasn't shown you. I understand that," said Lisa. "But am I wrong? Is there anything that makes my guesses false?"
Reed didn't want to answer, but the fact that he didn't correct her was evidence enough. She stared at him a moment, studying his eyes, and then nodded.
"So I'm right. They're both the 6th word, and they're both the only words in German."
"Fine," said Reed. "You're very clever. But what does that tell us? Does the number 6 have any meaning between you and Mercury?"
"No," said Lisa. but it's a pattern.
Two instances isn't a pattern, said Reed, repeating the word as if eager to believe it. Until it happens in a third message, it's still technically just a coincidence.
That's why I'm here.
Lisa stepped toward him, then apparently thought better of whatever she'd been planning and stepped back.
Message 43 had 18 placeholders, probably to make sure that we knew there was a clue. In a meeting in Rennstall is an odd thing to say in a message, but if not for the placeholders, we might have glossed over it completely.
The long string of B's drew extra attention to the wording to make sure that Davis called in the analysts and to make sure that when he did, I saw the pattern. The sixth word is German, and it's a place I used to visit. Mercury made sure that I personally would see the clue he left for me.
You don't know that for sure.
I don't, she said,
and she stepped forward again, closing the distance between them. This time she didn't step back.
Usually we get to see all of the messages, but Davis only showed us a portion of message 42. I have my own suspicions as to why, but whatever the reason, something very big is happening. If we are right about Tsiganov, it could be as big as a military action. And if Longshaw really is my old friend Mercury, then he's sending secret codes directly to me because he thinks that this is the only way to stop the bad thing from happening. But I, she put a hand on Reed's arm, I cannot guarantee that Davis will show me any of Longshaw's next message, let alone the full text. You are the only one who...
Whoa, said Reed. You want me to...
He stopped.
You want me to show you a classified message?
Lisa looked at the floor, then lifted her eyes to meet his gaze.
I was awake all night trying to work up the courage.
I can't show you any document that Davis hasn't cleared, said Reed. I've already told you that.
It may be against the rules.
You say that like there's a caveat.
It's not against the spirit of our job.
The sentence fell like a weight on the floor. Reed opened his mouth, not sure how to respond. Lisa spoke again.
Why would Longshaw send one of his messages in a strange, non-standard way unless he is trying to prevent the wrong person from seeing it? And why would there be a wrong person inside the cabin unless one of us is a double agent?
Reed's face must have given something away, for she nodded at him.
I assume that this is the secret you and Davis have been keeping from the rest of us. I'm an analyst. It's my job to figure these things out. My guess is that Longshaw found out who the double agent is, hid the secret somewhere, and is now hiding clues in the rest of his messages, trying to lead me specifically to that missing message.
She stared at Reed a moment.
I didn't set out to uncover your secrets, Wally. All I did was look at the evidence and draw the most logical conclusion.
Reed was supposed to be watching Lisa to see if she did anything suspicious, and now here she was, asking him to go behind Chief Davis's back. It was too much to take in.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Please, Wally,
you are the worst liar I know. It is written on your face as plain as day.
But now ask yourself, if Davis can redact the messages before the wrong person sees them, why does Longshaw have to hide the secret? He knows who we are. We have files on the Stasi, and they have files on us. So why not simply tell us who the mole is and let Davis see it and let him deal with the traitor right there? Why go to all this trouble?
Unless, she trailed off, waiting for Reed to fill in the rest of the logic. When he did, he shook his head in shock.
You can't possibly think Davis is the traitor.
I don't know who it is,
said Lisa, holding up her hands in protest.
It could be Davis. It could be you.
She put her hand back on his arm, curling around his triceps.
I don't want it to be. And I don't want it to be Davis either, but why hide the message if not from him?
He's not a traitor.
Neither am I, said Lisa quickly.
Neither are any of us, as far as I know, but we still keep secrets from each other.
You know that better than any of us.
You were the one working cryptography when the transitional message from Longshore came in. That means you're the only one who knows the new encryption system. So you're the only one Davis uses in any talk about Longshore. A different day, maybe, even a different hour, and it would have been Ostertag. And now he would be the Longshore expert and you would be working all the other codes that he has now.
Her hand tightened on his arm. This is the same thing, isn't it? You and I are the only ones who know about Mercury and about the true meaning of the clues that Longshore is trying to send us. So why bring in extra people until we're sure? It's strictly in the spirit of the cabin and its rules to keep this between us for as long as we can.
Reed looked at her for a moment, then looked away, blinking, trying to think. It made sense in a way. What if Davis was a double agent? He could disrupt their process, ruin their plans. He could corrupt their information, hide key snippets of it, and point them off in wrong directions. But then why bother with the investigation at all?
Because Reed had forced it. He'd mentioned the possibility of a double agent to Mike Hogan in the State Department, and now they had to investigate, and Davis had been furious. And there were plenty of good reasons to be furious about that, Reed knew. Davis's anger and suspicion could be entirely justified by right and moral reasons. But they could also be consistent with the behavior and plans of a double agent.
Reed shook his head, grabbing himself by the hair. He took a deep breath, smoothed his hair again, and restarted his pacing.
What would you need to see in Longshore's next message? He asked. Just the sixth word?
I think so. If we are right about this, the sixth word of message 44 will also be in German, and that will be the sign that it is another piece of the puzzle.
Siegel warned you to pay attention, said Reed. Rennstahl confirmed that the messages were for you, maybe, and that they were coming from a known associate from Mercury. What will the next one say? An offer to meet in person?
That would be too dangerous, said Lisa. It's very likely that whatever he needs us to know is in the missing message 41.
You're right, Reed said.
He'd need to use some sort of dead drop, then tell us where to find it.
So if we're right, the clue will be in the sixth word of message 44.
Exactly, said Lisa. And it will say it in a way that only I can understand. Which means it will not be just any dead drop. It will be one of the ones that Mercury and I used when we passed each other messages in the field.
Reed stopped pacing, licking his lips and shaking his head. He didn't like this. He didn't like any of it. But it made sense, at least for now. And how much could giving her one word hurt? It made him feel guilty even to think that. It made him feel even worse to believe it.
When the next message comes in, I'll look at the sixth word, he said. If it's in German, I'll tell it to you later.
He turned to face her.
But you can't tell anyone else about this. Not anything.
I would get in just as much trouble as you. Maybe more.
She took a deep breath and then stuck out her hand to shake. Reed hesitated, looking at it. A double agent in the cabin would be bad enough if it was one of the officers. If the GDR or the Soviets were planning a military action, a double agent could obscure the details and make it harder for the cabin to identify the threat and warn the Western governments. But if the double agent was Davis, he was the section chief. He could do so much more. He could actively support an invasion, enabling it from the inside. He could create a false threat and send all the troops to the wrong place, effectively leaving the door unlocked for a Soviet army to march in unimpeded. Reed had to find the double agent, or the city of Berlin could be lost in a heartbeat. Maybe the entire Cold War.
I promise, said Lisa, her hand still extended. I will never tell anyone.
Reed took her hand.
agreeing to help her and echoing her promise. I'll never tell anyone. Lisa stared at him for a moment before stepping in closer, breaking the handshake, and wrapping her arms around his chest. She kissed him slowly and deeply, then led him toward the bedroom. 5:58 p.m., West Berlin. Two men, said Reed, reading from a puzzle book, meet again after many years. James has three children, the oldest is a boy and the other two are girls. John asks how old they are. The product of their ages is 72, says James, and the sum of their ages is today's date. Reed looked at the cover. If this was a daily newspaper, that would mean something, but since it's in a monthly puzzle book published without a date, it means something completely different. Mm-hmm, said Lisa.
What it means, said Reed eagerly, is that the exact date doesn't matter, but the idea that it could be a date does. John says that this formula doesn't help him, which means...
Mm-hmm, said Lisa.
Reed looked up from the book in his lap, pencil in hand, to find Lisa staring at the clock on his living room wall. Lisa? She answered without looking at him.
Yes?
You seem preoccupied. 5:59, she said, watching the second hand click over past the 12 and begin a new revolution. 1 minute left. Reed frowned. What happens at 6 o'clock?
Bettina goes home. Not exactly on the minute, not every day, but most of the time. And when Bettina goes home, the cabin is effectively closed for the day.
She stared at the clock a moment longer, then shook her head and turned away.
Longshaw can send us a message any time he wants to, day or night, but we will not know about it unless it comes while someone is in the office. If it does not come right now...
She looked back at the clock and watched in silence as the second hand moved around the circle and back up to the 12 again.
We won't know until tomorrow.
Reed frowned.
Is that why you've been hanging around my apartment all day?
And because I'm nervous, she said, still staring. I didn't want to be alone.
She paused, then shook her head and looked at Reed.
I'm sorry I make myself sound heartless. I'm not using you, Wally. You help me feel calm. Thank you for being here for me.
Reed set down his pencil.
He started but didn't finish.
Of course she'd been nervous about the message. He was nervous too, but it changed things somehow to know that she'd been so completely focused on it. He spent a pleasantly lazy Saturday with her, or he thought he had. Has she spent that time not with him, but with his proximity to the Longshore messages?
Was Lisa the mole?
She looked at him.
Yes.
What?
You started to say something.
I was just going to say that we don't know for sure what's happening in the cabin. Maybe the message is coming in right now and they haven't decided to call anyone about it yet.
You're making me anxious.
Lisa rose to her feet, pacing idly in the cramped apartment living room. After a moment, she turned to him.
Tell me about your puzzle, the three men.
Three children, he corrected automatically.
Three children, she said, two girls and a boy, and we need to calculate their ages?
Reed had the distinct and unsettling feeling that she was trying to distract him. Was she? He didn't know how to press the issue without pressing too hard. He looked down at his book. The product of their ages is 72, and the sum of their ages is today's date, October 21st, said Lisa. This was published a few months ago in the States, said Reed. And it's a monthly, so there is no date, which means the exact date doesn't matter.
Then you cannot find the ages, said Lisa. There must be many groups of three numbers that multiply together into 72.
He did the math in his head. There are 12 sets of numbers that multiply to produce 72. The date restriction makes some of them obviously false, like 1 and 1 and 72. I suppose it's possible to have children with those ages, but their sum is 74, and no months have 74 days. I think there's only,
He did some more mental math. 9 combinations that add up to a number in the proper range. No, wait. 1 plus 3 plus 24 is only 28, so that fits. There are 10. Lisa glanced at the clock and Reed's eyes followed. 6:03. How long are you staying? He asked.
What?
He nodded toward the clock. How long are you staying here tonight? Are you here for a while? Should I make dinner?
Only Americans eat dinner at 6 o'clock.
Until 8, then? 9? Or...
He hesitated and then said it.
Are you only staying until you're sure that I won't be called into the cabin? Lisa moved her head as if considering him from another angle.
You seem upset.
I'm a little frustrated, yes.
I'm listening to your puzzle.
It's not about the puzzle. The kids are 3 and 3 and 8. This is about you. It's about whatever reasons you have for being here.
Lisa paused again, looking at him closely. I thought I was spending a Saturday with my boyfriend.
I thought you were too.
She raised her eyebrow and then her expression turned cold. Then why am I here?
He hesitated again, but it was too late now. Because you want to hear the next message.
So do you.
Of course I do.
So what is the problem?
The problem is... He stopped and then looked down at his puzzle book. He didn't know what the problem was, or maybe he did, and he didn't want to name it. If she was only spending time with him as a way of getting access to the longshore messages, then he shook his head, refusing to follow that line of thought any further.
The problem is nothing, he said. It's me.
I'm just nervous is all. Going behind Davis is more than I'm ready for.
You agreed that it was a good idea.
I agreed to do it, he said, looking up at her again. That doesn't mean I'm happy about it.
Do you want to back out? Reed pursed his lips, trying to probe his own feelings. Did he want to back out?
Yes. But not as much as he wanted to know what was really going on. And either way, he didn't dare leave Lisa to work on this alone. If he was with her, he could at least see what she was doing.
I want the truth.
Good, said Lisa,
because we need to get to work.
She shot a final glance at the clock.
It is 6:10. Bettina is gone, and most everyone else in the office too. Davis will still be there, who knows when he goes home. But it is safe to assume that they are done for the day. We aren't getting a look at any new messages until we go to work tomorrow morning, which means that if I am still here, I am here for you. And you can drop this petty jealousy.
Or you're just staying later to prove my jealousy wrong.
This is not an attractive look on you, Wallace.
Some of us don't. He stopped himself. I'm just nervous. I told you that.
Lisa stared at him in silence for a few more moments. Reed pretended to focus on his puzzle. If we want to find out what is going on, she said, we need another avenue of investigation.
What do you mean?
I mean that we cannot simply wait for another longshore message. What if he never sends one? What if they have caught him and killed him?
Don't. We need another angle of attack, she said again.
There may be a double agent in the cabin, and we have to root him out by whatever means are necessary.
I'm not breaking into the cabin.
Neither am I, said Lisa. But remember our goal. Ultimately, we aren't looking for a new longshore message. We're looking for an old one. Message 41.
We can't just go pick it up, said Reed. It's in a dead drop somewhere.
Maybe. Or maybe it's somewhere else. We are still only working on theories, remember? So here is a new one. What if Longshore is passing messages to Davis through the same method Davis uses to pass messages to him?
Reed frowned. You mean the confirmation codes?
Davis sends him a new code every day, said Lisa. They obviously have some kind of channel they use to communicate.
But it's only one way. It basically has to be, or we'd
be using that instead of... Reed stopped himself, terrified at how close he'd come to saying player piano. He collected himself. Instead of the system we're currently using.
Maybe, maybe not. It is worth looking into, at least.
Reed felt that sick feeling in his stomach again. Now we've moved beyond hiding intelligence from the chief. You're talking about spying on him.
I'm talking about finding a hidden message that might identify a dangerous double agent, said Lisa. That is a threat to Davis, to us, maybe to the entire Western Alliance. If breaking one rule means doing that much good, it is obviously our duty to do it.
Even if it is, the system they use for confirmation codes can't possibly be the answer we're looking for.
You don't know that. Message 41 has 23 characters, he said, interrupting her. And Davis can only send one letter at a time.
Instantly, Reed knew that he'd said too much. He'd just shared two pieces of top-secret information with a person he still wasn't certain he could trust. The gaffe made him stop short, dumbstruck by his own mistake. Lisa furrowed her brow in concern.
You look like you've seen a ghost. What's wrong?
I shouldn't have said that.
But he can only send one character? Asked Lisa.
That's not damaging intel.
But it is, he said. And now his prudence was at war with his professional eagerness, cryptographer face. It's a limitation, and every limitation we discover in a system tells us more about it. It's like, he looked around the room and his eyes lit on the puzzle book. It's like this puzzle, he said at last, tapping the thin pages. There are 12 sets of three numbers that multiply into 72, so we need more restrictions to tell us which set is the correct one. Listen to it again. James has three children. The oldest is a boy and the other two are girls. John asks how old they are. The product of their ages is 72, says James, and the sum of their ages is today's date. John says this formula doesn't help him. James says he has all the information he needs.
James sounds like an ass, said Lisa.
Reed ignored the jibe. Limitation number one. The sum of the ages is a day of the month. It cuts out two options because their sum is higher than 31, but mostly it just points us at the next limitation. John says that knowing this formula doesn't help him. And why wouldn't it help him? Because two of our number sets add up to the same sum. 6 + 6 + 2 = 14, and 3 + 3 + 8 = 14. All the other sums are unique. If it was one of those, then the formula would help. But because of this limitation, that knowing the formula doesn't lead directly to the answer, we know that it has to be one of those two sets.
But that still doesn't tell us the final answer, said Lisa. Which of the two sets is correct?
Reed smiled.
It's right there in the puzzle.
Now you are being an ass.
Fair enough, said Reed, and tapped the second line of the puzzle with his pencil. In most codes, the key that brings it all together is usually something so completely innocuous that it doesn't look like a clue at all.
Their genders? Asked Lisa.
Close, said Reed. The genders are a distraction. The real clue is in the way they're presented. The oldest is a boy and the other two are girls, which means there's an oldest, which means it can't be the set of 6, 6, and 2.
Lisa smiled.
Another limitation.
Exactly, said Reed. So the only answer left is 3, 3, and 8.
So, said Lisa,
we have two limitations for the confirmation code delivery system. One, it has to go out every day, and two, he can only send one letter at a time.
Maybe three limitations, said Reed.
I'm still pretty sure that the system only goes one way.
Pretty sure, said Lisa, but not completely, no.
Then that is our next job,
said Lisa. We will divide our labor and move on two fronts. I'll talk to Bettina to see what I can learn about Davis's daily routine. Does he go somewhere every day? Does he change the arrangement of flowers in his window? If he does something every day, she has to have noticed it. Your job is simpler. You have his ear and his trust. So use it to learn what you can.
The thrill of explaining the number puzzle evaporated like mist, and Reed felt the reality of the situation crashing back down on him. She was asking him to spy on an officer of the CIA.
Lisa,
He didn't know how to finish that sentence.
I know, it's hard, she said. I know it feels wrong. But you're the only one who can do this. You're the only one who can get close enough.
And then it hit him. The terrible question he'd felt circling him earlier, now lunging out of the shadows for the kill. Was Lisa only with him because of his access to Longshore and Davis? Was their relationship a lie?
Wally?
He didn't answer. Instead, his mind was focused on one single fact, looming so large and so abruptly in his mind that he couldn't think of anything else. He and Lisa had only started seeing each other about 6 weeks ago, 2 weeks after the wall went up, 1 week after the transition from the old one-time pads to the new player piano system. Before that, it was just occasional flirting at office functions. Before that, he hadn't had anything of specific value to offer her. Now he did. She was taking it.
Wally,
she said again, and her voice had become more playful. You have cryptographer face again. He didn't want to believe his own conclusion. There were any number of reasons she might have chosen to start seeing him, and most of them were completely innocent. But what was more likely? That an experienced, beautiful field agent would be attracted to the quiet cryptographer with no social skills? Or that she was using him to get information? She was using him just like Operation Talon would try to use Frank, get close, build trust, and then ask him to betray everything he stood for. But no. The other explanation also worked. Maybe she genuinely wanted to help find a Stasi double agent. Reed couldn't let his own lack of confidence accuse a woman who might be completely innocent. If he removed his poor self-image from the equation, the side that said to trust her held just as much evidence as the side that said to run away. Which side should he trust? For now, he couldn't trust either. He needed to gather more information, and that meant he needed to wait. Sunday, October 22nd, 1961, 8:04 a.m., West Berlin. Reed passed the ghost stations in silence, too caught up in his fears about Lisa and Longshore and everything else to pay much attention to the gloom or the emptiness or the chance of being trapped. He made his transfer, walked to the cabin, and tried to find some way of saying hello to the security guard without looking guilty. The guard checked his ID, asked an idle question about the weather, and waved him through without comment. Reed walked in the door, greeted Wagner with a polite hello, and then gave the same to Lisa. She smiled back, signifying nothing but professional courtesy. Suddenly worried that someone might think he was talking to her too much, he then said hello to Frank, only to find that this was just as awkward. Reed was hiding a secret about him too, and also about Wollreich, and every time he addressed any of them, he worried that he was giving away vital information about those secrets. He saw Oersterteig sitting in the window and practically ran to him as an oasis of guileless small talk.
Guten Morgen, Wallace. Oersterteig took a pull on his cigarette and then blew the smoke out of the window in a smooth gray cloud.
Morgan?
said Reed, and looked out the window. How's your girlfriend?
Deep in the physical and spiritual cleansing that only the Eastern arts can provide.
Reed scanned the park. Not crowded, given the late October temperatures, but still dotted here and there with walkers and dog owners and groups of children kicking a ball. The yoga girl was standing in profile, her legs spread wide, her arms spread out and parallel to the ground. She projected an almost eerie stillness.
Vera Bhadrasana,
said Ostertag and smiled mischievously.
The warrior.
Do you ever feel bad, asked Reed, just watching her like this?
Bad.
Guilty, said Reed, and then clarified further.
Dirty. We are spies, said Ostertag. Every second of every hour we are watching people, listening to people, ascribing to them motives and meanings so intimate it would make them blush to know that anyone was paying attention. My Aphrodite, at least, is doing what she does in public, where everyone can see. Which does not mean she demands to be watched. Perhaps she simply likes the park or finds that her energy flows more purely with her bare feet planted in dirt and grass. But it means that she is not opposed to being watched. She makes the choice actively.
How many of our subjects can say the same? Reed frowned.
I suppose, but watched or not, she's probably opposed to whatever you're thinking about her. Ostertag smiled again.
And now you have reached the limits of my redeemability.
He blew another cloud of smoke into the air and looked back into the park. My explanations sound noble, but they only go so far. Reed waited, standing by the window, watching the smoke curl and dissipate, and when he didn't move away, he realized that he wasn't just waiting, he was waiting for something. He was waiting for Bettina to poke her head around the door and tell him about another longshore message. He watched the door to her office, but she didn't appear.
This one is called Tadasana, said Ostertag, but Reed shook his head.
I have work to do.
Reed walked to his desk, said good morning to Chuck and guten Morgen to Gisela, and sat down to read his stack of daily reports. He finished, and Bettina didn't call for him, so he read them again, paying closer attention this time, forcing himself to think about new things, any things, and not about Longshore. There had been another skirmish by the wall, though no one had been harmed. Another pair of refugees had crossed into West Berlin in such a way that they were questioned by the West German police instead of disappearing into the city, and the head office had requested Lisa and Chuck to read through their reports. Ostertag thought he had cracked part of the puzzle behind Mother Goose, one of the Stasi's more mysterious number stations in the city, and wanted Reed to check his math. He set that one aside to work on later, and then sat and waited again. 5 minutes. 10 minutes. Still nothing new from Longshore. He wanted to look at Lisa to see what she was doing. Was she nervous? Was she staring at Bettina's doorway? He didn't dare to turn. Bettina stepped into the room and walked toward him. He started gathering his pencils and paper, but she walked past him to the next desk and smiled at Yannick Wohlreich.
Do you have a moment? Chief Davis would like to see you.
The promotion, of course. Reed watched Wohlreich frown, stand, and follow Bettina into her office toward Davis's. This path led his eyes past Frank, who gave no sign that he noticed or cared. Reed picked up the papers with Ostertag's notes on the Mother Goose number station. It was a statistical analysis of more than a year's worth of broadcast numbers, cross-checked against the letter frequency in English, German, Russian, and French. It was exactly the kind of thing Reed loved, but he couldn't concentrate. Where was the new message? Longshore could send them at any time. It was true, but they typically came in the early morning, and they almost never had a gap of 2 days between them.
Was he trying to gain more information before he sent something? Was he trying to send it, but something was stopping him?
Hey, Wally.
Reed looked over to see Chuck standing up, holding a small stack of papers in his hands.
Can you join me in the back room?
Lisa, you too. Reed frowned, not sure what this was about, but he and Lisa followed Chuck into a filing room just off the main office. Chuck closed the door most of the way, keeping an eye on the gap, and spoke in a whisper.
I think I've got something on the racing stable, he said. I don't think anyone else knows about that part, so I'm keeping it just between us for now, in case there's a, you know.
Lisa nodded. Apparently Chuck had arrived at the same conclusion she had, that Longshore's current messages and the secrecy around them suggested the presence of a mole in the cabin.
There are only two racing stables that survived the war, said Chuck. Only two big ones anyway, and one of those is right here in the American sector.
That's Mariendorf, said Lisa. My father used to go there.
It's a great one, said Chuck.
I go all the time.
But the only reason I can do that is because it's on our side, and that means it's probably not the scene of a secret Stasi meeting with a KGB overseer. Or at least if it is, we're all very bad at our jobs. The other major horse track in town, though, is the Hoppegarten, which is technically just outside of town, but still within what I would call the greater municipal area, and very much inside the cozy confines of the GDR.
Is it still in use? Asked Lisa. A lot of places that survived the war just sitting empty and abandoned.
I went to a race there just a few days before the wall, said Chuck. It's about a 40-minute train ride from my apartment. If the wall had gone up a couple of days earlier, I'd have been trapped on the other side.
They would have let you come back, said Reed. You're American.
Lisa looked at him, one eyebrow raised, and Reed frowned.
They wouldn't have let him back?
Lisa shook her head.
I'm an American in West Berlin, said Chuck. That means I almost definitely work for the CIA or the military. They'd strap me to an interrogation chair and lose the key.
Reed swallowed.
Remind me never to cross the wall then.
Lisa bit down on a laugh.
Hoppegarten is not the only stable in the East, said Chuck, but it's the biggest by far, and if Longshore is just carefully referencing a wrench stall like we're all supposed to know what it is, the odds are very good that he's talking about Hoppegarten.
Reed wondered if the wrench stall even had any meaning anymore. Was it just a restaurant mentioned only to grab Lisa's attention, and the entire cabin was chasing an empty lead? How many resources were they wasting by refusing to share their secrets? If the alternative was a Soviet invasion, it would all be worth it. If.
Do we have any agents who can look into it? Asked Lisa. There's only so much we can learn without actually visiting the location.
Volreich has contacts on the other side, said Chuck. It's never easy to get them a message, but he might be able to do something. We'll have to wait until he... Speak of the devil.
Chuck had been keeping his eye on the crack in the door, and now he opened it, revealing the main room of the office. On the far wall, the door to Davis's office creaked open, and Volreich emerged with a smile.
Achtung, he said. May I have your attention? Section Chief Gordon Davis has just asked me to serve as Section Sub-Chief of the Cabin. I will continue my ongoing duties as asset handler while also helping to manage the office and increase productivity. This is a great honor, and I promise you all that I will serve humbly and professionally to make this listening station the best in Germany. Thank you.
That's weird, Chuck said. But he got promoted? Asked Reed.
That he announced it himself.
Chuck shrugged.
That's Volreich for you, I guess.
Harold Wagner stood and walked to Volreich to shake his hand.
Glückwunsch.
Ja,
said Lisa, nodding at him from across the room. Glückwunsch, Yannick. You've earned this.
Congratulations, said Reed, and the others in the office echoed the same, all but Frank, who furrowed his brow.
Section subchief, he asked. I didn't know we had subchiefs.
The cabin has been under increased scrutiny from the head office, said Wohlreich. Davis doesn't know why, but he suspects, and I agree with him, that we've been doing good work lately, and the leadership of the CIA and BND might want to duplicate our organizational system in other sections. Because of that, I won't be changing anything, simply making sure that our existing systems function as efficiently as possible.
Okay, said Frank and nodded. Okay. I guess that makes sense. He looked back at his work, and Reed couldn't help but watch him waiting for the other shoe to drop. A few seconds later it did. Frank began his career as a disgruntled underling with gusto.
I guess any organization that